The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
All right, I think I'm ready to go. This is a session on preparation for service at home. And whether you are homeschooling or whether you are living in a home, there is always an attitude to develop in children of heart of service. So we're going to look at both attitudes, abilities, and activities in developing hearts of service. Now, first of all, some foundational scriptures here. We read in Acts that Peter, I believe in a sermon, mentioned that Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. And children do need to learn to do both, to give and to receive. There's give and take. And if nobody is willing to receive, nobody can give. If nobody will give, nobody can receive. But these are some of the foundational attitudes and scriptures, as we heard about this morning also. And loving your neighbor as yourself, that's a scripture that's hard to wrap your mind around, to actually care about others. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, obviously, we can only do so much for our neighbors. Neighbors are neighbors, and we're responsible for ourselves. But however, this is the word, to love the Lord your God and your neighbors yourself, and to think about other people. A key thing to keep in mind as we train children to think of caring about others and serving others is that we are following the example of a person, not a cause. The world is full of causes today to end poverty, to end drug use or whatever, and that is impossible. But nevertheless, we follow the example of Jesus as a person who calls us to care, and it's important to remember that this all begins at home. Love begins at home, and service begins at home. Service is not necessarily some big thing that you go 5,000 miles away and do something great in another part of the world, although there may be a time for doing something like that, but it begins at home, following the example of Jesus. And one of the things to develop in children is the attitude of looking outward, not just caring about your own things, but the things of other people, to think of others. Now, I'm going to talk about three things here. The first third of this talk will more or less talk about the attitudes or the affections. This isn't in your handout, but I'll just refer to this. The heart is central. And the Bible says that out of the heart are the issues of life. But Paul talks about in the soul, he talks about the mind and the will and the affections. I'd like to talk a bit first about this part of us, the affections, the caring. If students don't care, if we don't care, why, we're not very likely to give attention to what needs done. And we can have all kinds of knowledge and all kinds of skills, but if we don't care, we're not going to serve. And how do you develop a caring heart? How do you develop the attitude of caring, of service? Well, one of these is to develop solid habits. To, as someone has said, without caring, there's no sense of community. And this is on your handout. I have these quotes: do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also the interests of others. Now, this doesn't mean that you are allowed to snoop in other people's things or to nose in other people's things, but to care about the needs of others. I just isolated a couple things here to cultivate an attitude of caring and service, and some of this is already on your handout. You don't need to copy this all down. But one area is diligence and industry. This is what we're talking here about, an attitude of being diligent and industrious. How do you cultivate that attitude? Well, one of the things I suggest is sayings. And I have some of them there on your paper. When you have work to do, deal with a will. Those who reach the top must first climb the hill. You can probably remember some sayings that your parents or grandparents quoted as you grew up. And it is amazing the impact of a saying. Just a couple other ones here that, again, these are on your paper. Well begun is half done. A person good at making excuses is seldom good for anything else. Our deeds are greater than words. Thinking of this, we're not talking here about skills. We're not talking about knowledge. We're talking about an attitude. And little sayings, proverbs, maxims. In the classroom, you can put some on the wall. You can put one at the top of the chalkboard each week. Actually, you might not want to overdo it. A few well-chosen maxims can go deep. A few years back, we had, in our all-school devotions, we had the fathers share some people who influenced their lives. They shared about the lives of some people who influenced them. My cousin talked about his mother and some of her sayings. And one of the sayings that he quoted is one I had not really grown up with. I might have heard it, but never really was familiar with it that much. And it was, "Don't try to take a lazy man's load." What does that mean? What's a lazy man's load? Yes. Anybody? I saw somebody shake their head here. What's a lazy man's load?
My mom used to say that when mm-hmm. I tried to carry too much. I should have made two trips.
Yes. It's too big of a load.
Yeah.
Which sounds counterintuitive, but the issue is if you piled up and try to take too much, you end up dropping the whole pile and making a mess. And he mentioned that. And it's amazing, even just in the last couple of years, it's amazing how often I've thought of that. You know, as you get older, you try to be more efficient in going here and there, or even unloading the van here and carrying things in to set up. So you have this and this, and then you're going to have to maybe hold a door, and so you decide, now, if I carry this yet, is this... And the and it's amazing how a statement like that, when you face something, all of a sudden that statement comes up and you find that before you and you make that decision. What's the wise thing to do here? When it comes to cultivating root character building attitudes in children, it's amazing. Now, you don't harp on these. You don't nag children with these sayings, but they are very powerful. And then another major character building quality, if we're going to have hearts of service, is kindness and thoughtfulness. Again, a few statements here. Politeness is the outward garment of goodwill. Politeness is not artificial behavior. It can be. Some people's politeness is simply a veneer, and it's for show. But genuine politeness comes from a heart of goodwill. And it's possible to have goodwill, but to not be trained to be polite or courteous to others. And there is courtesy is important. Kind words are the music of the world. Kind hearts are the gardens. Kind thoughts are the roots. Kind words are the blossoms. Kind deeds are the fruits. And then the scripture, don't look just on your own things, but on things of others. And a third attitude is gratitude and thankfulness. Scriptures tell us to be thankful, and gratitude is its completion. And someone has well said that thankfulness might be merely words, but gratitude is shown in acts as we relate to others. Another way of developing hearts of service is to read stories, particularly good biographies, to children. And I'm just referring to one here, Father Damien. Biographies are fascinating because every person's life, if you read about it, a person of character, there's something to learn from their life. There's something inspiring, something encouraging. there's usually also something that you would not want to follow. Life is kind of messy, they say. Biographies are, they are people. And people do things that we don't necessarily model everything they do, but there are things from biographies for us to model. Father Damien was a priest, and he was assigned to serve in Hawaii and learned there was a leprosy, there was an island that they more or less put the lepers on and left them more or less shift for themselves. And he went and lived among them and helped build a church, and he wrote to his brother, he said, "I make myself a leper with the lepers to gain all to Jesus Christ." And it's quite a story, and his presence there and the way he served them turned the things around. And even though they were still lepers and they still suffered and died an early death, the life that they did have was much more purposeful and pleasant. However, eventually he did get leprosy. After 16 years, he himself contracted leprosy. There's a picture of him there before he died. He's suffering. His fingers, you can see his face. This is not an old man. He's in his upper 40s there. That's just one example of somebody who his heart was gripped, and he, you would say, poured his life out for others. The point here is that some well-chosen stories can... A good story works in a... It gets to the heart, it gets to the attitude, and can affect you without you even thinking about how it affects you. And so, good stories. And then there are fine quality books to read. Along with, so where do you find these stories? Well, find some today over here in the book sale. Look, check the Christian Light catalog. There are some. And I didn't do the homework for you here, but there are many books today on the market. And another one, the Christian Aid Ministries through TGS. And I just got a shipment of their catalogs before I came. You're welcome to help yourself to one of these if you would like. But there are many more books available today than there were even 15, 20 years ago. Very well-written stories about people in similar settings to what we experience, people in other parts of the world, but people who somehow serve, whether it's disaster response work or whether it's working in poverty areas or helping rebuild after floods or just doing common, ordinary, helping work in various kinds of mission settings. Stories can be very powerful in helping to develop an attitude for service. And another one is to be an example. Children are great imitators. And that's one of the most powerful ways you can influence children to care about others, is if they know that you care or they see you caring. So give them an example. Have them help you do things. So those are, I've been talking here about this part, developing the attitude. You know, we all do have an attitude. You came this morning with an attitude. And we often use that term when we say somebody has an attitude. Say, Mandy has an attitude. We think of that as a negative thing, don't we? But actually, we always have an attitude, a way of looking at things, a way of feeling about things. And attitude, we talk sometimes about needing an attitude adjustment or having an attitude adjustment. And attitudes are something that you can't just teach somebody a lesson. When it comes to the mind, to understanding things, you can explain something and then somebody understands something he didn't understand before. But with the attitude, you really, the person has to set his own attitude, but we can cultivate an attitude. That's what I've been talking about here so far. Stories, maxims, examples, we strive to help cultivate an attitude. Now we're going to go to a second part, and this is the more the thinking part we might have an attitude of serving, caring, and we might see a need, and we can care deeply, but don't know what to do. A specific example would be if somebody has some kind of medical problem, maybe in an emergency, somebody needs CPR. Well, you can care deeply. I don't want the person to die, but you can't just care. You have to be able to do something. And so when it comes to serving, there's quite a bit of knowledge and skills needed. So we're thinking here about moving beyond just the attitude, but about the actual ability, either the ability or the knowledge. Someone mentioned the other day that their friend recently had bypass surgery, and they wanted a surgeon who knew what he was doing. You can't just have someone who says, oh, I don't want you to die. You really need help with your heart. But this person needs to have the skills. So let's talk now about, with children, working at developing both the understanding and some skills. Moving on your outline, this would be now on the back side of your sheet, Roman numeral 2. Two major areas here under abilities would be knowledge and skills. Interesting quote here by Charles Kingsley is, have your tools ready, God will find you work. We don't know when we're young. Our children don't know what God might call them to do sometime. When I went to public school and I came back to school to ninth grade and found out that they had decided that everybody was going to take personal typing, 2 periods a week, learn to type. Well, I hadn't chosen that. The year before, when we went into ninth grade, we were able to choose many of the courses that we took. And I had chosen that, but the decision was made for us by the administration. I wasn't really opposed to it, actually rather enjoyed it. But that's just one example when I look back. I had no idea when I was 13, going on 14 years old, that I would be typing and typing sometime using that skill. I had no idea. And so when we're children, we are called to develop understanding, skills, thinking skills, whatever, typing skills, computer skills, and have your tools ready, God will find you work. The world is full. There are requests for these people want help. There's this need, there's that need. And there might be people who care, but do you have what it takes to meet the need? So have your tools ready. And another fascinating quote here is, be not simply good, but good for something. And when you're good for something, that means you have some skills developed. Well, one thing I'm going to suggest is, if you're going to serve people, help people, whether it's around home or in other parts of the world, it's very helpful to know about them. Understanding people of different climates, different settings, different cultures, even in elementary ways, like you learn in school, stands you in good stead. There's a book, just came on the market. He has it for sale up here. And just the other year it came out. This is an example of an excellent kind of book that every school ought to have, every home ought to have. And it's a different kind of atlas. When I got this copy, I kept it beside my chair, and each morning when I had my personal devotions at the end, I read a page in here, and if you browse through it, you would see why. It was very informative. For example, here's a spread. This is not like many atlas. When you think of an atlas, you often think of something full of information. And it has lists of rivers and volcanoes and mountains. It's a whole bunch of boring facts. Well, that's not what this is. It doesn't try, when it covers Europe, it doesn't try to cover every country of Europe. It picks out two or three representative countries. And so when it talks about Russia, it talks about the Caucasus Mountains of the Trans-Siberian Railway, the Ural Mountains, it points out where they are on there. It talks about geysers. And it has something about the history of Christianity in that area. And it talks about a church that was built in the 16th century. And And it talks about one of the Russian cosmonauts. It says, contrary to rumors, he never stated that he didn't see God when he was in space. He and his family were actually members of the Orthodox Church in Russia. And then it has some World Heritage photos. And on the next spread, there's illustrates the Russian doll, some Cyrillic writing, and something about Russian pancakes, something about the biomes in Siberia. It's a broad, in broad strokes, it gives you a whole variety of information about Russia, and in just a few pages you get a feel for the people, the climate. You have some facts, and I'm pointing this out because as you learn something significant about different parts of the world, it opens your eyes a bit, helps you look over the fence, like they say, and see how people like you are living in other parts of the world. It's just a couple pages I just showed you. Another thing in learning about the world is current events. Now, this is a fascinating question. How do you learn about what's going on in the world and with children? If we're going to care about others, there's a certain amount that we ought to know about what's out there. However, how do you provide that? If anything, this is a question here. What resources do you use? Or how do you, or your young people, or you as a family, or in school, how do you find out about what's going on in the world? Any magazines? News magazines? Children's news magazines? Anybody?
Newsletters, like CAM newsletters and Gospel for Asians.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent source, the newsletters. In fact, I was going to suggest a bit down that you ought to get, if you don't already, if you get in contact with Christian Aid Ministries, you can get on their mailing list and you'll get a newsletter each month. I'll talk a bit about that here in a moment. Anything else? Well, some people use the World Magazine. Who's familiar with that? And that, it's interesting. There are pros and cons with that. The pros are that it does cover a variety of things around the world. And it's not the liberal news media perspective. Any cautions about the World Magazine? Any cons? Martha, do you have anything to say?
The Week is another one.
The Week?
The Week, it's a weekly, which makes it nice because it's up to date.
Okay. All right. It's called The Week.
Uh-huh. Mm.
Is that for children or for
adults?
Adults, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the World Magazine is very Protestant-oriented, so it has the God and Country flavor somewhat, and you have to be alert to that. But on the other hand, if your children read that, you can then help to point out to them that flavor and how to process that, because it's something they do need to learn. All right, then, developing skills. First of all, I've been talking here about developing some knowledge about the world. Now, thinking about skills. Reading and writing, being able to read and being able to write, are skills that you're going to need if you're going to serve. And so, when we learn to read and write, it isn't just to get schoolwork done, but these skills are really needed in various places throughout life, whether it's writing books, writing letters, reading literature. And then the other pair that goes together is listening and speaking. It's fascinating, these two today, it almost seems that we need to spend more effort in teaching our children to listen well and speak well than we did before. One of the interesting things about getting older is noting the changes in communication patterns. And this isn't just a young people thing. This is across the ages. But somewhere in the late 1990s probably, the word like took on new usage. And people were like, not sure of this, and he like went outside, and that's still around, but that was new. And somewhere around 2008, I think it was. It's hard to date because it comes in slowly, but this one has come in quite prevalent. And the latest one is the "and yeah." So now there's this communication pattern in which a person, you know, like, "I'm wondering, yeah, I'm not sure, have you, yeah, have you heard, yeah." And when the person is finished with what he has to say, in fact, I heard of somebody said one of the young people came, was in mission service somewhere and came home over communion time, and each person has a bit of a testimony at communion time, and this person gave his little testimony, and the last words out of his mouth before he sat down were, "and yeah," and he sat down. This is not a youth thing. This is easily, we easily acclimate ourselves to the there was once a time when people thought of what they wanted to say, and they opened their mouth, and something like a sentence came out. So they would say, "I'm hungry, I think I'll go over and have some coffee and see if there's a cookie there." Now, they're more likely to say, "You know, I'm like, I wonder if there's anything, yeah, I wonder if there's any cookies over there." You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, right? And it seems to me that communication patterns are almost, I picture insects with their feelers. It's almost like we have feelers, and the first person starts to express himself, that, you know, "I'm like," and they're, "Yeah, right." And they, so I start expressing a little bit of a thought, and then you pick up on that, identify with it. Now, I'm not sure that we're going to turn that around or change it. I think it's a change in our society and our culture, and it's affecting us. I can tell that you've heard it too, and you probably. However, it's almost like we have to teach English as a second language. If you're going to speak that way, all right, you can speak that way when you're in an informal setting, but you ought to develop the ability to speak in grammatically correct and actual sentences if you're going to speak. So give attention to that. Not that you're going to change the discourse patterns in informal ways, but if we're going to serve well and communicate well, that relates to the last one here, and this is almost more important, discussing. When we discuss in a group, and as Anabaptist people are supposed to be able to talk things over and not just and work through things. In a true discussion, I might say something. Maybe we're discussing whether to have a the youth go on a youth backpack trip or whatever the topic is. And one person suggests something, I suggest something. And if it's a true discussion, you will listen to what I'm saying. You won't just wait until I stop talking so you can say what you want to say. You'll listen to what I said. And then when you make your next comment, your comment will show that you actually heard what I said. And that will be reflected. And you might say, "Yes, I think there are quite a few youth activities, but I don't think there are too many because maybe I said something and you're responding to." And then when you're finished, and the next person speaks, he again reflects that he has thought about what we've said, and he adds his comment to that, and the discussion gradually moves somewhere. It isn't just a series of individual dumps. Discussing. So whether, if you're homeschooling, children need to learn to, you can discuss whether you're at the supper table, in the classroom, devotion time, or Bible class, or whatever. These are important skills. When you're serving, whether it's in the community or in the foreign field, communication is an important part of service. The communication skills are important. And then there are other skills we can do as families, as individuals, crafts, expressive skills. When I say expressive skills, these are things that we do On your paper there, I have, for example, crafts, projects, singing, visiting, where you actually do things, perhaps, for others. Oh, yes, and before I move further along, I'll just point out, with a newsletter like this, this serves a number of purposes, because with each of these little articles, the setting of where this talks about is in another part of the world. So, for example, back to school in Haiti or not. So we're learning something about Haiti, and there's usually a picture involved, so you see how schools in Haiti are different from schools here. And you learn something about that they sometimes can't go to school because they don't have uniforms. And then you also learn about practical projects that they have to help people in those settings. So you're learning about another part of the world. You're seeing an example of a practical thing that can be done. And you're also, maybe it's something that you can actually become involved in yourself to help in another part of the world. You actually can receive, let me just back up here, ma'am. If each year Christian Aid Ministries has an open house, they have a big one in Ephrata, Pennsylvania. And it's an interesting place to visit. There are about 1,500 people come two nights back to back. Not the same people, different crowd each night. Anyway, they have that's presented on DVD, on slides. And those are available. If you call Christian Aid Ministries, you can get those DVD open house presentations, and you could share them to your own children if you want to. It's a very, very, very informative about the various projects throughout the world. Now, another way of helping your children learn about activities, practical things, we're talking about practical things now that can be done, is to note some of the projects. I'm just going to take a few minutes here to point out five of them here that Christian Aid Ministries is involved in. And the first one being the family self-support. This was featured in one of their newsletters one time. And as you look at a project like this, your children can see that service sometimes has some very practical applications. And the word practical actually does mean putting into practice. What does this look like? And while you're learning about something that is being done, you can also get an idea of something else that could be done. As you grow up, you have to have eyes and hearts for service, and you have to think of things that could be done. And here's an example in the self-support. Let me read a thank you letter here that came as a result of one of these projects. Dear brothers and sisters, we live in the town of Baila Sikva. We have two small children. I, the father, had worked in construction, but work was scarce, and I wanted to start a business, but I didn't have enough money. I asked CAM to help me start my business, and the mission has helped me. We received $4,500 from the mission. The money was enough to start the business. With this money, we built a greenhouse, bought a boiler for the greenhouse, a chainsaw, wood for heat, flower seeds, and small pots for flowers. Now, my main place of work is in the greenhouse, which the Lord helped me to build through you. We grow annual flowers, but this year we also planted cucumbers for autumn, so now we have enough work. With Christian love and thanksgiving, Daniel and Galina, Rosalie and Daniel Chychensky. And so here's one practical example. Now, when I read this article, I thought, well, that's somewhere over in Ukraine, Russia. I've never been there. But this is someplace. It isn't just. And so I looked on the map and actually found this place. This is where these people live. So if you, with your children, if you read an article like this, you can also make a little geography lesson out of it and actually see what is life like there. And so I looked up and found a couple of pictures of this area. Here's what houses look like there. Again, think of learning about how people live in other parts of the world. there's this abstract, generic view of people across the world that are maybe living in poverty or need support to help get a business started. But if you can actually envision, actually see a few pictures or realize this isn't just some general abstract idea of people out there. These are real people living just like you and I in some way. So they live in houses like that. But then in that area, there are also historic buildings. Here's an example of Russian Orthodox Church in that area. And in the wintertime, it gets very cold. This is what it's like to live there. It's a way of making this come home. This is real. Well, another one of the projects is Bibles for the World. And Bibles for the World, here's another thank you letter. Words cannot express the gratitude our family feels for the Bible you provided for us. We treasure it and read it every day. Reading the words of our Lord makes our hearts overflow with joy. For many years we longed to know the truth, and now we understand more every day and our faith becomes stronger. God bless you for your sacrificing and giving so that we can know the truth. Reading a few examples like this and seeing some illustrations can help our children see how something seeming as small as distributing a Bible can change somebody's life in another part of the world. And then there's the Bible story books are being distributed. The Seed of Truth, they're distributing 1.5 million copies in 4 languages regularly. These are practical projects. These are ideas of how people are serving today. And this helps us think about there are things that can be done. You're not going out there to reform the world, but it's making a big difference. The Ebola crisis over in Africa. The Christian Aid Ministries has done something. You can't end the crisis, but they have made a difference by sending gowns, masks, and so on. Another project, Hope for the Handicapped. Jonathan mentioned this morning about how years ago the handicapped were not given much attention in this country. Well, in many countries today, people are just more or less left to shift for themselves. And here's an example of, here's a 7-year-old boy who was severely handicapped. Every week he had to go to the hospital for treatment 9 miles away. His father couldn't afford the taxi, so he carried him 9 miles to the hospital each week. Quite a task. So they provided for a wheelchair for him, and he no longer has to carry his son. Now he can push him in the wheelchair 9 miles to the hospital each week. That's still quite a task, but there's a big difference between carrying somebody on your back and pushing him in a wheelchair. So, service sometimes involves very simple things, like something as simple as a basic wheelchair. But imagine the difference it makes in that life somewhere. Sometimes we may be inclined to think that the problems, the needs are so great in the world that what the little thing I could do wouldn't make any more difference than throwing a pebble into the lake and one little splash. But we can't look at it that way. We know that we can't meet all the hurting needs of the people, even in our own communities, let alone the people around us. But we serve to serve Christ, and it does make a difference for that one person. And here's one more yet. This is a leper. There are lepers today. And again, at the same time that we learn about projects like this, we're learning something cognitively, too, about, in this case, leprosy. Leprosy still exists today. It isn't just something back in Bible times. And there are real issues with it. Here's a man whose leprosy is eating away at his feet, and Christian Aid Ministries has projects to help people like this and Hope for the Handicapped. And then last, here, the Seed Project. Seeds seem so simple. They're so easy to get for our gardens. Some people do not have access to seeds. And by receiving seeds, year-old seeds, and repackaging them and sending them to places like Romania and other places, they are able to, people can have their own gardens. And thousands of needy families are able to provide their own food. And they also get a little gospel folder with it. Again, something as simple as packs of seeds and a little gospel tract can make a big difference in people's lives. So as we learn about examples like this, if you, and it's not a big project, but just informing your children of things like this, they can recognize that there are some very everyday things that can be done, and they make a big difference in people's lives. So we'll look last now at this third part. We talked about the attitudes. Now we talked about learning about things, developing the skills of speaking and reading and writing, and also understanding something about how other people in other parts of the world live, and learning about some of the projects that are being done. Now let's talk last about some actual activities. What can our children actually do, and little projects as they grow up to practice serving? Mena Simons is famous for this quote, which is on your paper, that true evangelical faith does feed the hungry, comfort the sorrowful, and it reminds us of the words of Jesus when he said, "Inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me." So let's think of some things. One of the things that can be done is there are gifts and projects, and I'll mention this in a limited way. Children and our families can sometimes give for projects. But, and there's a place for that, for giving money for a project. Christian Aid comes out each year, and other organizations do too, with a little booklet with gifts and projects that you can actually support. But what's more practical than just giving money is actually doing things, such as gathering together the materials, getting rulers and pencils and making up kits, or giving used clothing. Well, let's think of actual things that we do. Backing up a bit, children must have an opportunity as they grow up. They should have an opportunity to both give and receive love, affection, and care. Here's some examples that I illustrate. Something as simple as caring for a pet or relating to grandparents. No, I'm not saying they're the same thing. But if you ever taught in a classroom, it's not unusual for a teacher, an elementary teacher especially, to have some kind of classroom pet. A hamster, a gerbil. Somebody the other day said they had a little critter of some kind, a bird. You tell me why, and children often enjoy that. They'll come in the morning, first thing they'll do is check how the frog is doing. What's with this? What's the value of having a pet? What does it have to do with service? Well, does this pet depend on you to stay alive? Mm-hmm. It does. If it's not cared for, it will die. And one of the things to develop a heart of service is to get us outside of ourselves and to think about other living things. And something, pets can both give and receive affection. One of the things we have to be careful in growing up is that we're not all wrapped up in ourselves and just thinking about ourselves. And just the act of caring for, or even plants, caring for plants, you follow the growth of this thing, and you feel good when the thing is thriving and doing well, and it takes something from you every day to keep this thing healthy and well. And it's just a simple thing, but yet a powerful thing, the experience of caring for other living things. And it's something that children ought to experience both giving and receiving love and affection. And so let's look at some practical things. Work is a form of service. Begin at home. So whether it's cleaning up, putting away the toys, whether it's cleaning up, doing dishes, carrying out the garbage, doing the chores, love begins at home, and service does too. And children are part of a family, part of a group. It begins at home. Going down a few more in the neighborhood or the community, there are opportunities for service, whether it's shoveling snow, helping a neighbor with adults. I know in our community there's a family there. It's every community probably has a number of them, kind of, for lack of a better term, just kind of poor souls. And there are some adult children there who cannot drive a car for whatever reason. And I know two of my cousins, between them, this one daughter, she's probably in her 40s now. She does have a job, holds down a job, but she needs to be taken to work every day and picked up. And somebody does that for her. And so there are things like that to do. There are, when our children were young, we enjoyed singing, so we went to a couple of next-door neighbors, and they were older people, in December, a couple of weeks before Christmas, and just went to the door and sang a couple of Christmas carols. And this became kind of a tradition. And we went around and did this, and now we go with some of our children and a few grandchildren. And it is amazing the impact that that has. We've had more than one widow already has said, "Now, you made my Christmas." And you get the feeling that, I wonder, how could somebody coming by and just singing two or three songs and then moving on, how could that make your Christmas? If that's all you have, you mustn't have much. Well, some people don't. They don't have much. They don't have family. They don't have friends. And it almost defines their season. A big one today is this one. The elderly, the shut-ins, retirement homes. There are more and more people, and my generation is just getting to that age, the baby boomer generation. When I was a child, they couldn't build schools fast enough because of all this population growth, and now they can't build retirement homes fast enough. And many older people have very little family, very few friends, and it's a very simple thing to take a few children in. And when you take children into a retirement home, the eyes really light up. And there's an opportunity to sing, to visit, to listen to them. You can bless people by listening to them. Some older people would be delighted to tell stories. And if you're homeschooling, you can make more hay out of that yet by having your children, when they get home, have a little writing assignment where they now write some of these stories that they heard, a little mini biography. Or you can actually have an ongoing relationship with a few people in a retirement home, either with a class or with a family, by visiting regularly or making little mottos or little art projects to give them. There are various projects you can do, and finish up with others. So, what suggestions do you have? What actually acts of service can you do, just reaching slightly outside the family without big projects?
Children to church, with us to church.
Mm-hmm. Or invite other children to go along to church.
Or I meant if it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Good. What else? Something as simple as when you bake something, take a loaf of bread or cookies and drop them off at a neighbor. In most of our communities, you don't have to think very hard to know somebody nearby who would be blessed with little gifts of kindness, or maybe cleaning the driveway in the wintertime, raking leaves. Yes?
You would call them poor souls. Mm-hmm. You close
mm-hmm.
by.
Right.
8-10 miles away, but they enjoy a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And they, one lady called and said, we want a fruit cobbler. So we gave her
apple goodie and mm-hmm. apple crisp, and my 9-year-old did it. Mm-hmm. She said, "Oh, this was the best you ever made." And so it was an opportunity. I told my 9-year-old, and she was so delighted, and she mm-hmm. wanted to do it mm-hmm. 6 more times. Mm-hmm. But the lady keeps calling for more. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it's an opportunity how I respond when I tell my children she wants some more, mm-hmm. or, well, we can go give it to her. Mm-hmm. It made a big difference at home. It was mm-hmm. a few days I was really busy, and she called. I was like, wow. Calling for more food. Mm-hmm. And then I had to repent to my children, that's not right. Mm-hmm. If somebody asks us for something, the Bible tells us mm-hmm. we should give it. So mm-hmm. there was an opportunity for my children to see how we should mm-hmm. just give. And they were mm-hmm. delighted to help. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it does something for the children themselves to have the experience of raking somebody's leaves or something simple. Carrying the newspaper into the mailbox, whatever. Simple things that it does something in your own heart when you... And it's fun to bake, but if you know that something that you're baking is going to really bless somebody else, well, then it adds another dimension to it. And so, if we have the hearts for service, we can find opportunities to do it. And you do it close to home. And also can reach around the world. And of course, the king shall say in that day, "Inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me." And it's fun for children to do things in little ways without any thought of whether anybody will ever notice this or be recognized for it. Thank you. You're dismissed.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.